Welcome to another episode of Living an Ultralife. And this week, we have a guest on who two people have told me that I need to talk to this guy. And finally, one of my friends from F3, Funny Car, texts me. He's like, Mike, you have to get this guy on the podcast. You have to talk to him. So he told me his name is Eugene, didn't tell me his last name. And I find out it's Eugene Thompson, who another one of my friends, Adam Morrell, had been telling me about all these stories about this dude's running. And I'm like, oh, yeah. All right. Definitely. So we're going to bring in Mr. Eugene Thompson. Eugene, ready to go for a run?
Yeah, absolutely. Ready for it, Mike.
All right. Are you recovered enough to go for a run?
I did 15K this morning, so I think I'm okay.
There you go. All right. Just a little 15K just to start it out. So we're going to get all into the dragon's back and everything, but let's kind of start out with tell the listeners who you are, what you do for a living, where you live, all that good stuff.
Sure, absolutely. So Eugene Thompson, I live in Virginia Beach. What I do during the normal business hours, I run an architecture firm. Been doing that for about 25 years now, and great passion. We do work up and down the East Coast, as well as around the 20 states that we do work in. So it's nice to have been doing that for so many years, but it's also, I think I've, where are we at now? For the last 11 years, I've been running. Hadn't been a runner for all the time before. My wife had been running 10 years before that and begged me to go for a run. And I said, that's crazy. There's no way I'm ever going to do that. And I got suckered into it and did one marathon and then the next, and then the next. And so I think we rally up to about 77 marathons in the last 10 years so far.
Smokes, that's awesome.
Most of them, all road races. So I'll preface that. I've done maybe 5 or 6 ultras that I would consider, you know, over 50 miles. But even those have been pretty tame in comparison to the Dragon's Back. It all started because I'm a diabetic. And that was the reason why I started doing some running to try to help control my diabetes. And so that was a big piece of my life-changing things that I did 10 years ago.
Wow, that's fascinating. So you were diabetic, non-runner. This is mm-hmm. so funny because most of the people listening to this will know that I was not a runner until, you know, 14 years ago, and used to be the person who would look for a puddle to splash the people that were running on the side of the road. So, yeah, so yeah, life changes. So you started out because your wife obviously was a runner and to try and get control of diabetes.
Yep. Yeah, she had done a lot of 5K, 10Ks. And, you know, shamefully, I never really supported her. She'd go do the races and was like, no, I'm not going to go down there, cheer you on or do anything else. And, you know, she's now one of my main cheerleaders for everything else. She comes along to most of the races. She doesn't like to do full marathons. She's done 3 full marathons, but I think she's at, what is it now, 37 half marathons in the same time frame I've done it. So she does well. She doesn't like to do the longer ones. She's not fast enough, and so she says. So.
That's funny. Not fast enough. Yeah. So, and you've kind of turned into, when you're not out crushing trails and everything, a pretty fast marathoner, if I hear this right.
Well, I don't know about fast. You know, my fastest marathon that I've done is right at 5 hours. I'm not super fast when it comes to that, but I'm the tortoise. I'm persistent. I keep going.
Yep. So you're one of those guys that you just get started running and it's hard to actually stop, right?
I guess that's kind of true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
my friends have said
most marathons I've done in 1 year, I think I'm at 14. So,
wow. That's amazing. Yeah, my friends say about me, I'm too stupid to stop. So they say that should just be kind of my nickname. You might be right. I don't know about that. So in your running career, so marathons, what's your favorite marathon that you've done?
Oh, gosh. It's really hard. So I guess they all have different things that have been very memorable about them. So I think they're all, the one in November in the Outer Banks is a favorite because that was my fastest.
Okay.
Not because of the terrain or anything else. New York City was pretty amazing because you see all the people that's cheering you on and doing that. I've done one in Denver, the sunrise over the little area that they, you know, brought us out, dropped us off just outside of the city, and you had to run back in the city. That sunrise was one of the most beautiful sunrises ever. Earlier this year, I did three races in 3 days, Idaho, Utah, and Wyoming. And the scenery out there was, you know, was beautiful. So I think they all have their different charms to them. So I'm not sure I have a truly favorite one yet.
There you go. So did you do the Casper Marathon, or which one in Wyoming did you do?
No, there was a, it's called Trifecta, around Bear Lake. Three races that were within really driving distance of one another.
That's awesome. Yeah, I lived in Sheridan, Wyoming for a number of years. So I'm in love with the Bighorn Mountains. I claim them as mine. I always tell people they're my Bighorn Mountains, so nobody else gets to claim them.
But that's, you know, great.
That's just how it is. So now, like the ultra scene, what ultras have you run? Because you said that, you know, you consider an ultra 50 miles or more. So obviously you've run some good ones. So
yeah. So I started off, I guess it was, where was it? 2016. I wanted to do something. I wanted to work up to doing more than just a marathon. And I had this idea that I would raise money. I started a foundation to bring awareness for diabetes. And so I had this idea to run 50 miles, and I didn't have a race in mind. I didn't have anything else. So I decided that I was just going to run 50 miles around the community of Virginia Beach. And so I started off and, you know, planned out my route and did everything else. And I had a handful of people that would run along with me. So give me, my wife pretty much said, okay, I'm going to get some people to help to be with you so that you're supported and not dropping off somewhere on the sidelines or whatever else. And so I started to do that in 2016. I ruptured my Achilles pushing a car out of an intersection. Couldn't do that. Came back in 2017, literally in 6 months. I did 3 months of stitches and everything else, and then 3 months of training, and got back at it, did the Shamrock, and then started adding some races back in, and then was able to finish the 50 miler. So that was my not official race, but my first taste of an ultra. I've attempted the Outer Banks Blackbeard's Revenge twice to get the 100 miles. I've got 54 in before a storm blew in and shut everything down. And for me, that was still managing my blood sugars. And when I stopped, my sugars, you know, went wacky, and I tried to get back out there when the storm calmed down a little bit, and I just couldn't do it. The next time I did it, I got 66 miles in before my feet were covered in blisters and there just was no more left in me. And so I've done a couple of different ones like that. That's where the bulk of my races have been. In 2020, I created my own race. All the races were shut down, couldn't do anything. And so in middle of August, I had, you know, preparing for all these races, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to do a race around my circle in my neighborhood, which is 0.7 miles, and I'm just going to see how far I can go in 24 hours. And so a friend of mine who's a professional speaker, Dave Rendell, he goes, hey, I don't have anything to do either. All my races shut down and all my professional speaking gigs have stopped. I'll come up. He lives in North Carolina. I'll come up and do it with you. So he came up. He's like 6'6". So his stride and my stride are a whole lot different. But we did it for 24 hours. I got somewhere right around 60 miles in. I think he got close to 80, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow, that's awesome.
Then I did it again here recently. So
okay, that's fantastic. I love creating my own thing and going out and doing it. I've done some absolutely nutty, crazy, stupid things just like you. And those are sometimes the best. Yeah, you know? Just go. You know what? I feel like running from here to here, or I'm going to run in circles. Like I did a 50 miler in a warehouse for no other reason than
inside a warehouse
around the racks, 50 miles, just cause there's nothing else to do. So you might as well. Right. So yeah, insane stuff is good. So let's jump into this whole Dragon's Back. I have been reading about it. Oh my gosh, Eugene, this thing is a monster. How did you find out about this?
So I had this little tracker that I has on my Facebook page. You know, you got so many races that get advertised and everything else. And right after the conclusion of it last year in September, I started seeing posts pop up, and those posts started showing the race. And I go, wow, I mean, this is intense. And seeing the pictures on top of of Crib Gotch and everything else. It's like, okay, I don't know if I can do this, but boy, I really want to try to do this. And so I told my wife, we're sitting down to dinner someplace. And I go, so I found this race. And she rolled her eyes. I go, okay, forget it then. You know, she goes, no, tell me what the race is. I said, well, you know, you always wanted to go to the British Isles, and we've never been there. She goes, yeah. And I go, well, this race, it starts at a castle, and it ends at a castle. She goes, you're leaving a whole lot of information out, I'm sure, right now. So when I told her the rest of it, she goes, okay, well, you're no goofing around. You know, you've got 10 months. You need to get serious about it and start pushing. And so that's what I did.
That's amazing. So what was your training to prepare for this? Because we'll start talking about it in a second. But how did you kind of tweak your training to get ready for this?
So I really needed to last year I didn't run any marathons at all. First year I've never done any marathons. Did a lot of mileage, but work schedules and things like that just prevented me from doing any races at all. So getting back into doing the races was a big thing. I had marked down a number of marathons just to get my mileage back in there. So I had before the race all the way till that trifecta, which was in June, I did 7 marathons. So basically I did 7 marathons in about 3 months. Wow. In preparation doing that. We have some property out at near Crabtree Falls, if you know where that is.
Yep.
And so we're about 4 miles from the Appalachian Trail. So we'd go out there and I'd just hit trying to run the trail. And I would say run loosely, trying to move up those hills. Never have considered myself a trail runner. I've done a few races where in Montana that I prepared for some things. And those would be loosely considered trails in comparison to Dragon's Back. 2 years ago, I did the marathon on the Inca Trail into Machu Picchu. So, you know, that was at that time was the most brutal run I've ever done in my life. So a lot of that was really getting some more verticals in there. I had a coach in Michigan. She is an Olympic runner that has done trail running. And so I had her start getting me ready for my programming and met her a number of years ago. And then just consistently doing the strength training at our local gym that we go to all the time. The strength trainer has both myself and my wife on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so we just kept consistently, you know, trying to push it as much as we possibly could.
So which area did you, of the AT, did you run up near Crabtree Falls? Did you do the Priest Three Ridges Loop or?
I did most of the time I was doing the Priest. I hit that going up. There's what is it? There's a spot, I think it's on. Is it 56? Is that the name of the highway there?
Yep, 56.
Yeah, okay, so there's a little stop spot right there. And so I would go up that and hit the Priest and dudes going that direction. And then towards the end of, you know, as we got closer to the date to go, I moved the other direction up on the Three Ridges.
Yeah, the Priest, that'll give you some practice scrambling that last quarter mile up to the top, huh?
Well, you know, going over some of the rocks and things, that was, you know, it just was imagining from the photos, okay, I've got some rocks, I've got some climbing around, gave me a little bit of that understanding, but it was still too much of a nice, clean path, too.
Yes.
Yep. But I was soon to find out.
I watched a couple of the videos. Oh, my. Oh, my. So you're doing all this training, 7 marathons in 3 months. Including the trifecta out in Idaho, Montana, in Wyoming, which, you know, God's country. So, I mean, that had to have been fun. So that gave you some altitude running, right?
Yes.
What's the altitude start at the first castle for Dragon's Back?
I'd have to look it up, but it's pretty minimal because we start at the castle in Conway, which is really right on the ocean. So it's a couple hundred feet elevation.
But then reality really hits you real quick, it looked like, in that first day. So let's just kind of set the stage. So this is you're not running 236 miles all at one time. This is a very organized race, isn't it?
It's, you know, kudos to this group. I've never, you know, I've never done a race that's a multi-day altogether where they take care of you the whole way through. So I don't have a comparison to go to, but I can tell you that they were very strategic in their planning process. You know, they had certain criteria of what you needed to do and prepare. They sent things out, gave you a detailed list. I think they've been doing this now for 20 years, if I'm not mistaken, or thereabout.
Wow.
So they had a massive list that was there. Here's what you're going to need to do. Here's what you're going to need to prepare for. Here's your gear. Here's the gear that you're going to have to carry with you. Here's the gear that in case it gets extra cold that you need to have in your bag. Here's the gear that if it gets hot, what you're going to need to accommodate. And so with that, we had weight requirements.
Okay.
So we had two bags that we're able to carry besides what you carry on your back. So there's certain requirements they had to carry on your back through everything, all your food, all your water for the day, cold winter gear in case, you know, not the super winter gear, but, you know, some overlays and things like that that was in there, emergency blanket, whistles. You had a map. They gave you a map, actual physical map and a compass that you had to actually use to navigate with as an option. So that was all that you had together. And then in the big bag that basically gets dropped off, taken to the campsite every night that you run into, had a certain weight restriction. So you could have your extra food, your extra clothes, whatever else that met weight. If it didn't make weight, then you just had to take stuff out. And then same thing, we had a drop bag that had 2.5 kilos. So that drop bag was dropped at basically the midpoint of every race.
Right.
So all of that preparation, going through weight checks, everything else, all tied together. Of course, I let them know I was a diabetic, and so they were going to, you know, have extra caution to make sure they watched what I was doing, at least being aware. But all of that, through that whole process, getting set, mandatory meetings, and then you start at, you gather, still dark, 4-6 o'clock in the morning, inside the castle in Conway. They have this chorus of singers. That's there. I think it's an all men group singing the chants and everything else. It's there. Everyone's lined up. Everyone's in their gear. Everyone's got their headlamps on and everyone's set to go. And then they launch you off into the darkness, running
wow.
down the ramps out of the castle.
So you literally start inside the castle and then you launch out of the big door, right? That comes
out of the big gateway and then down the pathway of the steps and rocky stones into basically it kind of rolls into a little bit of a handicap ramp where they, you know, visitors and things can get closer to the castle, and then out onto the streets. And then before long, you make your way past some stiles to get into the fields, and then you're starting to climb the mountains.
So one of the things that I loved about the description of this was the I gotta look up the word for it, because it was just, I've never seen it in a race before, the way they described what the terrain is. Let me see if I can find this, because this totally cracked me up. I've never seen pathless percentage non-pathless, and I'm like, pathless? So describe what this is like, because a typical day is a certain percentage road, a certain percentage track, a certain percentage what they call path or trod, and then a certain percentage pathless. So kind of describe day one. Obviously, you're on a road, and then all of a sudden, what did you hit next when you went through this little turnstile?
So, yeah, they had all of these first little pieces. Basically, one person can go in this little turnstile at a time. Come in, close the gate, open the gate. And, you know, so we're just kind of in single file as we go through that. And we're hitting a grassy field. It's got a trodden down piece, but not too bad, really, because it's in the beginning. Everybody's surrounded, kind of know where you're going. I'm following other people, not too worried about my route just yet. And then we make our way up a hill. And as soon as we start to get to one spot in the hill, it's like, okay, I got to get my trekking poles out, because now I'm going vertical. So I stopped, and about the time I'm stopping and pull my trekking poles out, skies open up, starts to rain.
Oh, no.
So here I am. I'm climbing the first hill, grassy hill, and it's a pretty cleared. You can tell where the path is. You know, it's a trodden path, so it's pretty good. I get up top of the hill, working through that, and 20 yards in front of me, fog is so heavy, I can't see anything. I don't see anybody in front of me. Don't see anybody behind me. The path is probably no wider than what you would imagine a sheep would be on. And there are sheep all over the place. So it's like, okay, am I on the path or am I on the sheep path? I don't know which one I'm on. I have this video that I posted on one of my Facebook posts after the first day. I'm running along and all of a sudden this wild horse is right there on the trail in front of me that just appears. I was like, whoa, holy cow, what is this?
That is so awesome.
So those are the clear paths. And you can see where that is, and then you get into areas where there's a lot of grass. So you're going through fields, And the only way I can describe some of these fields is if you imagine in our area, you know, we have pampas grass, right?
Yep.
So if you imagine the sheep, you know, eating that pampas grass down to the nubs, and there's those nubs, but your entire field is covered with these nubs. That's what you're running across.
Wow.
And so you don't really have a great foothold anywhere.
I was going to say, so it's undulating all the time, right?
All the time. Yeah. So there's not a good spot that's there. So you have that piece that's there. And again, you can kind of see a path where people have gone before you. But I had my GPX on my watch that was guiding me as much as I possibly could, which was a new experience for me. So that's another story itself. But then you get to certain areas where then you hit bogs. I was actually thankful for the bogs, maybe not initially, but I recognized that I could see the mudden steps of the people that were in front of me. So I was like, okay, I know that's where I got to go. Someone's had all the mud that's right here. You don't train in Virginia for bogs. You don't know how to do that. And multiple times I went knee deep up to my hip in bogs. I think one guy had mentioned here recently, read his part of his post or whatever else. He went all the way up to his chest, fell deep into it. So it's like, you try not to do that. Try not to lose your shoe in the bottom of it. But yeah, so you had those paths and then you come to spots that were just like complete rock. And you had no idea. You couldn't see where somebody had gone before. Ideally, there was a little bit of a difference in the rock that was there. Maybe some smaller rocks, but it was very hard to distinguish.
And so as you're making your way up into these rocks, like on the first day, the video I was watching, it looks like a spine. I don't even know. Is that a good it looks like the teeth that are on the back of a dragon. This may be where dragon's back comes from, but it's like, it's pretty narrow.
It is. Right? It is. Yeah. So, and I will say with 100% certainty that I can't pronounce nearly 99% of the places that I was at. It's there.
And when they I said, was trying to
oh,
understand
yeah, that's in
the
blah, blah,
person.
Blah, blah. It's like, okay, I don't know what that is. that area there is called Crib Gotch, and it is the spine piece that's there, as you mentioned. There's two sides of the ridge that you can go across. One has you can move pretty quickly on it, but that side has no bottom. Basically, if you slip off of it, then you're gone. The other side is a little bit more rocky. But it has a little bit more stability too. And there's a ledge down below. Now, if you fall and you go on that ledge, you will still hurt yourself pretty bad, but you probably won't die. The other side, you will die.
Good options, huh? So which option did you choose?
I chose the side that could possibly land on something and only break a little bit. So
there you go.
lots of slippery rocks though, because it also started to rain when I was ending up at that spot too. So that was the difficult part.
So what mileage were you at when you hit the spine?
So that was right at 26 ish, somewhere around.
Okay. So you've gone past the halfway point. I think they call it the halfling. Where
Hatchling.
People can kind of join in. Yep. So you've gone past that. So is there like a place to kind of resupply water and food there?
Just before that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Just before that, there's a spot that's there and the pieces that are there. So you have to make one of the key parts is they have, there's about, just depends on the distance of each day, but somewhere between 8 to 12 checkpoints. A lot of them are recommended checkpoints that you need to be at a certain time. But there are three that are critical. If you miss any of those three, then they're gonna cut you back. And so you know, you can imagine going across the spine. You're pretty well. Some are brave. Honestly, I was scared to death. So
yep.
I'm very gingerly walking across the best I can, holding on dear life, going on there. And needless to say, I did not make the checkpoint on the other side.
So what happens when you don't make the checkpoint? Do they take you then to the end part, or what does that mean?
So if there's a, you got to go to a certain spot where there's vehicles. So if you miss or whatever, it's like, well, you're still got to get someplace to get a vehicle before you can get down and get done with the thing. So you're still running the race to a certain extent. But basically what it means is when you, and I could have kept on running. I could have kept on doing the whole thing the first day and got in late, missed the time at the end of the day and did everything else. But I also knew that I had need to prepare for the next day, whatever that was.
Right.
So, and I realized I had met my mat. So, you know, the climbing down, all of that was a lot. And
yeah.
So I was like, okay, there's only so much I'm going to be able to do. So I was disappointed in myself. Obviously, you know, you do all that time and effort training, but I also would find out in the next few days that that's probably all I could manage.
Okay.
Anyway. So.
And mentally, how hard was that whole stretch? When you're in that stretch, how did you keep yourself strong mentally? Because that had to have been mentally draining.
So through the course of the 6 days, I've told other people that, you know, really I was broken. Physically, it was so demanding. I'm one of these runners who wears headphones to run, listen to music, listen to audibles or whatever else. But I chose just before the race. I was all prepared and everything else. I chose just before the race. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to be there. I'm just going to take everything in as much as I can. And this may be dangerous. You know, this is might be like Odysseus being tied to the mast of the ship and telling his all these sailors to put beeswax in their ears because here come the sirens and you're going to torture yourself with it. And that's what I felt like I did, because all my inner, you know, I went through every emotion on the run. I was happy. I was sad. I was singing. I was angry. I was crying. It was very tough emotionally. And you got to
awesome.
Keep in mind that I'm at the back of the pack for the better part. So I'm not in a crowd of people at all. So 90% of this race, I am truly by myself.
Wow. I like that. But yeah, that will break you. That's some of my richest times have been in the middle of nowhere, nobody else around, and just having a conversation going, okay, God,
yep,
you're either carrying me or I'm dying right here. So, I mean, did you have some of those moments?
Oh, yeah. I had lots of those moments. I was talking to myself. I was singing myself. I wished I could remember song lyrics better sometimes. I step in a giant bog and this sheep over the one side, you know, bah, like quit laughing at me, you know. And then I get up and I start chasing the sheep and running around. And there was one point in the time I had climbed up this one huge mountain hill, and nobody was around me. I didn't see anybody around me at all as I'm going up. And so you get to the top afterwards, and you're so happy with yourself that you finally made it to the top of this, you know, one more hill, one more top, and the view was amazing. And so I'm standing up there, and I don't know, something struck me to do the Sound of Music thing, and I'm, you know, singing, you know, standing out there with my arms wide like Julie Andrews and dancing around or whatever else. And then I realized someone came up behind me, that there was somebody behind me.
That's awesome. That was awesome.
It's like, sorry about that.
Oh, that was awesome. So day one ends, and do they put you up like in tents or something, or where do you sleep first
night?
Yeah,
so each day you make it into the it's almost like its own finish line. You see the time and the check, and you come into the finish line. And as you get in there, you get checked off and everything else to make sure that you made it in, because they have trackers on us. So
okay,
we had mandatory trackers that would go back in, and you would see a, you know, basically the dot. So anybody at home could watch, you know, my dot move down the screen, whatever's there. But it was also kind of a rescue beacon as well. So I come in, they check off, make sure I'm good, ready to go, and everything's, you know, safe. And then we were put up in 8-man tents, you know.
Oh, wow.
7 other strangers, nice and stinky, smelly and muddy. And, you know, we got into the site. My wife actually volunteered to do the catering crew. So there's no other really way for her to kind of know what was going on with me and how was she going to get from spot to spot and know it's there. So she volunteered, and they accepted her to be part of that team. And so, you know, I'd come in and I'd stick my head in the catering tent and, you know, said, I'm back, and then go to wherever I needed to go to get ready for, you know, the next day. We had no showers. So
right.
There was a freezing cold creek. So I'd go down there and drip down and get my feet in the cold, icy water and clean up the best I could to get some of the smell off of me and the bog water off of me, and then get back into camp and go get some food, and then go back into the tent, get ready for another day.
There you go. So what, that first night sleeping, how was that?
Yeah, you're cram packing these things too. It's the tent's a good size because there's space in the middle where we can all kind of have our bags and mingle around and everything else. But the campsite is in a field. They set them all up in the field, but it rained. And so the field turned to mud. And one of the things that my bag didn't, you know, I had to cut weight in my bag. And so a couple of things I threw out, I had six sets of clothes, fresh clothes. I threw out three outfits and flip-flops. And so basically I had to slide my nasty, stinky, wet shoes back on my feet to walk around the site or just go barefoot, which later on in camp, I was like, I'm not putting my shoes back on. I'm just doing that. So.
Yeah.
But the sleeping, it wasn't bad. You know, we had to, in our drop bag that we had, they had, our, you know, we had our sleeping bag, our mat and everything else that we needed to. And so it was good. It was good. Good as could be.
Cool. So day two starts. Mm-hmm. Early morning start again.
Early morning start. I think day two was freezing cold. I think when I woke up, it was like 42 degrees.
Oh.
And I literally, after that first day, I just didn't want to do it. You know, I was like, you know, I'm just going to cuddle up in my sleeping bag and I'm just going to hang here. Because I didn't make my cutoff times, I had an option for basically the rest of the races. So for the hatchling, it's not really half of the race. It's really, they take off a couple of checkpoints either on the first of the race or at the end of the race. You have a choice what part of the race you want to be able to do. So two or three checkpoints goes off. So if you choose not to run in the beginning part, then you're going to run, you know, 2/3 of the race that day. And so you'll come to, you know, a stop in the vans and you know, they'll bring you back. So they won't let you start with the ones that are still in full competition, which is at 6 o'clock. So I could start as early as 6:30 if I was ready to go.
Okay.
I chose to do the little bit later one. So it gave me a little bit more time to get things ready and get my mindset. So there was, so basically they put us on a van, buses, and put us in there, you know, like about 10 miles down the road before we started.
Okay. So how many miles did you do the second day?
Oh gosh, I don't remember the individual ones. There were, every day was right at a marathon. Some not quite as long. First day was actually, I think I said 26 miles, but I think it was more like about 22 miles when I got to Crib Gotch, something like that, because I didn't quite reach a marathon in any day. Total up 142 miles for the course of the 6 days.
That's amazing. That is so incredible.
And it's not really the miles, you know, it's really, you really kind of gauge the time. I was out there for just under 64 hours of running time.
That's incredible.
Climbing
wow.
time. Maybe that's really.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say.
Climbing, swimming.
Have you figured out how much climbing you did over the whole time?
So I did, because my Garmin had a really good tracker and everything else. So at least the ascent part of everything, it was right at 27,000 feet climb.
Wow.
So
total.
Just shy of.
Over 6 days.
Over 6 days. Yeah, over 6 days. So you have that and back. Down. So the ups and downs, that's the one thing is kind of, you know, they talked about the mountains. Oh, actually they call them hills. So that you're out on the hill. Nothing is really super high. It's just a lot of ups and downs.
Right.
A massive amount of going that and the rocky climb and the terrain that's there. So yeah, 27,000. So just shy of what you do for Mount Everest if you're doing one big climb.
Yeah.
But it really took its toll over the course of everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, I mean, foot care, how did you take care of your feet? Because it's wet every day, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tell you, so that was one of my biggest worries. I had two worries for this whole thing that I knew would shut me down based off of some other long duration running. And that was my fueling. So, you know, part of the training that I did was making sure that I found the right foods as a diabetic that I could eat.
Yep.
and would keep me going without getting sick. I can't do a bunch of sugars. I couldn't do the gels, couldn't do candy bars, can't do things like that. So I had to be very careful of what I had to do. And so with that, that was my first worry is if my blood sugar starts to drop, I've got to have fuel to bring it back up. I learned that lesson. So whenever I dropped stuff out of my bag, it was definitely going to be the clothes. It wasn't going to be the food.
Right.
I did find out I probably brought more food than what I needed, but I didn't know that at the time. But the other part was feet. That would shut me down. You know, the longer runs on a road and everything else, my toes start to get blisters, my heel and everything else. And so I started thinking about what would be good. And I saw a bunch of, basically I went on YouTube thinking, okay, what do I need to do this? I'm going to have to tape my feet. And I watched a bunch of videos. And so and I've never done this before, never in my entire life. Not one race have I ever taped my toes and feet. But I plan to do it this way. And so I take my pinky toe, take my second toe, take my heel, take my bottom, my soles, my feet, and had KT tape and got everything set. And I'll give you a flash forward. So after 6 days, not one blister.
Yep.
Not one blister.
I tell people that all the time. So I use toe socks and I tape my toes and I don't get blisters. Thank you very much.
I peeled off my feet were like ridiculously sore from kicking rock and climbing and stepping. And it's just, you know, and I peeled off my socks and took off the tape and I'm looking all over my feet, which look like prunes because they've been in water for 10, 12 hours every day. And I looked at it, I was like, there's no blisters. That's amazing. So the 30 minutes of taping my feet every morning was, I mean, that just sold me on that. So, so that was the two things that I had to make sure was good and did well.
So being a diabetic, I mean, what do you use for fuel? Because you're not going to use like a hammer or a tailwind because way too much sugar in that. So what do you use?
So we've belonged to, I don't know if you've heard of Shaklee, vitamin and nutrition supplements. We've belonged to that for many years. And when I started really getting in aggressive into the running and doing everything, I've shifted everything over to that. So they have some hydrate pieces. So I loaded up on the hydrates. I had little packets. So I had the powders for my, when I was at camp, which has a little bit more carbs and stuff in it. So it wasn't too bad, but that was when I filled up my water at camp. But when I refilled out on the trail, then I had some smaller packets that had some hydrates. So I tried to make sure I did that all the time with my waters. For the morning, I never ate any of their breakfasts. Their breakfasts were their choices were, it was a meatless option. So vegetarian and lots of breads, lots of French fries, chips, as they call it.
Yeah, stuff that's not good for diabetes. Yeah.
No. I ate dinner and then I had to go take a whole bunch of insulin because it climbed like crazy. But I didn't eat their breakfast. I had my own protein drinks in the morning and that's what I always use and that's what I do every day. So
awesome.
I packed all of that stuff. So I had that was a lot of my weight of my bag was all that of that kind of food. Protein bars that I have, meal bars and things like that. There was a couple of little, you know, treaty things that I, you know, had a little bit of sugary. I had some Honey Stinger waffles and I have my go-to gummy bears, which is always good in a pinch if my sugar starts to drop.
Yep.
But for the most of it, I stayed pure and did not have any problems.
That's fantastic. That's a hard thing to do. I mean, when you're out there in the middle of nowhere, really, and you're trying to figure out how to fuel. So, yeah, well done.
Yeah. The first day I didn't turn my insulin pump off entirely. I cut it way back and then I did drop a few times. And so then I came back in. Of course, there were some people that were around me. They heard it beep. And so they reported back to the health staff and they said, we heard that. I was like, yeah, everything's good. I'm going to cut back. You know, I'm going to turn my pump completely off and I can turn it back on if I need to or whatever, but I'm going to do that. And then the next 5 days, I didn't have any problems. So I was,
awesome.
I was very pleased with that.
So now when you're running like this, so your pump is always on you someplace, like in your pack or something or what?
Yeah. So mine's all of a wireless. So
okay.
I put the insulin pump on my arm, on the back of my arm. So it misses the backpack and everything else. And then I have a CGM. So the CGM is on my, kind of like my belly and my hip, side of my hip. And that gives me relays back to the controller, but also goes to my phone, which also relays back to my watch. So if I started to drop and there was an alert, it actually pops up on my Garmin watch and tells me that, hey, you need too high or too low, whichever way it goes.
Okay. Yeah. And so then what do you, like, if it's too high or too low, what's the thing that you have to do?
Well, if it's too high, then I need more insulin.
Okay.
But that's pretty rare. It can happen if I'm going so slow and I'm eating too much fuel, then it can do that. But I was exerting so much energy on this one, that never was the case.
Okay.
But if it drops too low, then my only options are to either fuel, getting something in me, you know, the higher carbs or whatever I need to do to bring it back up, or I need to slow way down, which that's not good in a race, right? So
So
I got to either stop or do whatever I need to be able to do to kind of bring it back in check. So it's constantly, you know, watching it, see where I am at any given point. And I was pulling my phone out of my vest, you know, taking pictures and seeing things, you know, quickly. And when I did that, I could do a quick check to see, you know, how it was overall, and it maintained it pretty well.
That's awesome. So over 6 days, no big setbacks or anything.
Yeah, not at all.
That's awesome. Nothing at all. That is awesome. So let's talk about the whole emotional, mental, spiritual aspects of this.
Yep.
Where did Eugene go during these 6 days, and where do you think it's going to propel you in the future?
You know, there was a lot of things that, as I mentioned, I really went through every pieces of the emotion. And I think I shared with you a little bit, you know, I haven't even divulged everything even to my wife. You know, she goes, I know there's more in there. You're different. I know you're different. It's like, yeah, you can't do that kind of race without something happening. And I knew that this was going to be a transformational run. I just knew it. I mean, I was looking for that. I was looking for something to crack open, you know, peel back the onion, whatever you want to call it. And so I was prepared for that. What I wasn't prepared for is the delivery method, you know, and how big of an impact it was going to actually do to me. I think by being out there on the trail for the many parts by myself, completely alone, you know, that fueled everything. You know, again, there was times when I was just angry. You know, I think I found I had untapped, you know, unresolved anger that was going on and yelling, screaming, and it was about everything. But mostly came back to angry with myself. You know, I was angry with myself. I was like, why didn't I do more running? Why didn't I do more of this? And, you know, why didn't I prepare for that? And then I was angry with myself for saying things to people that's just embarrassing. Why did I ever say that to that person? And then I was sad about things. And then at times I just was broken down, just crying. I mean, I was by myself climbing up a hill doing this. It's like, why am I even doing this for? This doesn't even make sense. So it took its toll on me. Every night I'd come in and I was exhausted, not just from the physical duration of the run, but I was exhausted emotionally, just, you know, collapsed in the tent.
Yeah. So did you do any journaling during the race?
So that was one of my things that I really wanted to do. I had my phone in my vest pocket so that I could, you know, easily take it in and out and take pictures and things like that. And my idea was that I was going to speak text, because there's no way with my gloves and everything else on that I could, you know, type anything down. So it ended up that every time I tried to speak text, it came out gibberish. So I was like, okay. So I just did a whole series of audios.
Okay.
Did audios. So I recorded a bunch of things. I'm thinking about this, thinking about that, and I turned it on. Matter of fact, one of the times I did a video piece and then didn't realize it, and I shoved the phone back in my vest and started back down, climbing down a hill. And I got down to the bottom of the hill, you know, I don't know what it was, 10 minutes later, and pulled my phone back out, realized I had the recording on the whole time. It actually recorded through my vest.
Wow.
And I could see me, you know, the navigating, you know, it was pretty much my hand and the trail down below navigating. It's like, man, I should have done that all along. That was good.
No,
I
kidding.
Could have been talking and doing. And of course, you could hear me talking too. I was like, well, that's a stupid rock there. I'm going to fall off of this one. I'm going to have to edit this pretty good.
There you go. Not sending this one out right away. That's so awesome. Yeah, I call those my peace and quiet moments when I'm out and I just pull my phone out and I just record. And God only knows what's on some of those ones. I haven't listened to some of them, but, you know, it's just me just, you know, whatever foolishness is coming out of my mouth at the time.
Well, yeah. Well, it's kind of good because I think even the audio recordings work better than me even writing something down, because I'm thinking about what I'm saying when I'm trying to write something down and maybe putting it too polished. Whereas if I'm just rambling, then I'm also getting my anguish in my voice, you know, yep. All of that. So I think it comes out better. So, and I too have not listened to all of them. Matter of fact, they played the video at the end of when you finish the race and everything else, and compiled a whole video of everything. And I'm standing there with my wife watching it, and I just kind of broke down in tears. You know, I was like, man, it's too soon. It's too soon to be thinking about it. It was, and she goes, and she knew where I was, that I was in a place. There was a darkness place too. I mean, it was, it wasn't always good things. It was, there's spots where I came onto the edge of a cliff, and it's like, you know, this is a whole lot easier to get to the bottom of this versus having to run down this thing. And it was scary. It was scary. Yep. I was like, okay, get yourself together. Come on, keep going.
It's, you know, when you push yourself beyond what you think you can do, you discover a lot about yourself. And some of it's not pretty.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm working on, that was one of the things that as I started to digest some things, I looked at it and it's like, okay, so there's lessons I've learned. I need to pull these out and I need to write them down. And then I need to be able to share them. You know, what are the lessons that I learned on the dragon's back that, you know, that I learned about me that, you know, most people don't want to share their vulnerabilities, but that's where we grow. So
it is.
That's what I'm working on.
Good. It's a fantastic, it's a really, really stinky place to be, Eugene.
Yep.
But I mean, I'm just being honest. It's a really stinky place to be, but man, the after you process it and after you realize, okay, this may be stinky right now, but where it propels you is where the benefit is. And that's why we do these crazy things like this.
Well, you know, I came out of it thinking, you know, my priorities are all different now. What I want to be involved in, what I don't want to be involved in, where I need to cut back, you know, relationships that are not, you know, not beneficial for me to be involved in, or associations or whatever. It's like, you know what, I'm always, you know, obliging to do things, and maybe I need to not do that. Maybe I need to focus on, you know, family differently, or myself in a different way, and cut back and do things that I want to do, and not, you know, so it's, you know, not being selfish, but some things just can be cut out. And that was part of the discovery that I made. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things I think you'll find is, and it sounds like your wife is your best friend, just like, you know, I tell people my wife is my forever girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you're going to find is that your forever becomes even more important.
Oh yeah.
After these big things. And you realize just how valuable these strange creatures that we get to be blessed to spend our lives with really are. And so I will tell you, that's one of the roses that's going to come, you know, once you sort through the thorns.
Well, it was kind of funny because we were able to spend 2 weeks afterwards traveling and touring through England and Scotland and everything else. And so she was all excited. She wanted me to finish the race because she wanted me to be sad.
Right.
Because you're going to be terrible to go have a vacation with if you don't, you know, do this thing. But she didn't think about how my feelings were going to be after something like that or whatever else. And so she was hoping for these long conversations and sitting down talking. And it's like, I'm not ready to share yet. You know,
you
know, it's like little pieces started to pop out here and there, and things pop up, and, you know, even good things that I, you know, like silly things that I happened to me, I hadn't shared because it's all kind of buried and wrapped up all together, but I'm sure it'll all eventually come out.
It will. And it's all going to be awesome. So what's next, Eugene?
Well, let me tell you this one thing, please. I thought was the hilarious about this whole thing, because I get through this race. Day four had a lot of logging roads, gravel roads and things like on it. I'm so happy. This is fantastic. This is me. I can do this.
It's your road.
I'm going down hills, passing people and everything else. So this is sweet. And then day five is the longest day. If you did the whole race, that's a total of 44 miles. So the piece of the race that I chose was quite a bit of mileage. And that chewed me up and spit me back out. I mean, that broke me down even further, where I thought I was a great day finishing on four or five, took my way back down. Day six, we're coming into to Cardiff. Okay. So we're coming down out of the mountains. There's not that much change in elevation. Most of it's all down, so it's not too bad. You are coming into a city area, so you're coming off of these little pathways and things like that, and then onto paved areas.
Okay.
And I come to find out, trail runners do not like paved roads at all. and so they're, you know, walking or trotting or doing whatever. They are not running on the paths at all. And we come in to, I guess, pretty for the better part of the last 12 miles of day six is all on paved for the better part of everything. There's a couple of fields and stuff we cut across and do things. And getting close into the city, there's a park. And so I'm running on an asphalt path coming all the way in. And I'm texting my wife, you know, I get about 3 miles out and said, okay, this is probably the last time I'm going to text you. I'm hurting so bad. I'm just going to give it all I got. So I may not even text you again. And it just so happens, I guess I get somewhere around 0.85 miles. And I said, okay, get ready. I'm sprinting the rest of the way. she goes, okay. And so I just kicked it in gear. Everything I had left, I'm just sprinting down. Trekking poles in my hands, flying down the road, and you come up to the one edge of the pathway, and you see the security guards, and there's a race official that's there that's pointing you in towards the castle gate, and everything is there, and I'm just flying down the road, and you hear them like, whoa, 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 now that's how you finish a race!
That's awesome.
And I turned into the castle gate, you know, and as I start coming into there, now it all turns to a cobblestone, and it's like, you know, this would be real. I'm thinking in my head, this would be really bad to wipe out right here as I'm sprinting as fast as I'm going. I was doing something like about a 7.5 minute pace right there at that spot. Just everything I've got so fast that even the camera guys, you know, as soon as you come in through the gate, you got about a couple hundred yards before you get to the finish line right in the middle of the castle. And I was too fast. Camera guys had struggles getting set up fast enough and everything else when I got all the way there, but they did catch me. So
awesome.
So like, if I'm going to finish this, I'm going to finish it strong. So here we
go. There you go. Finish it with it. I'm so glad you didn't wipe out on the cobblestone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was scared. As soon as I got to a little spot there where I could kind of roll over onto the grass, it's like, I'm taking the grass.
There you go. That's so awesome. Now me, I would have been flying. I would have been doing a face plant on the cobblestones going, yep, this is the way Mike finishes. So, on my face.
Yeah, yeah. That was my big worry. Just I figured if I slowed down and did anything, and that was going to cause trouble. So I was going to keep on running as fast as I can.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was perfect. So what's next?
You know, I don't know. I talked to my coach today and I told her that I don't really consider myself a trail runner. She goes, well, you just graduated that, you know, you've gone beyond that. I was like, well, that's not my, definitely not my sweet spot. I know that the marathons are my sweet spot. I probably have some simple runs just to finish off the year. The Outer Banks is coming back around. That's my fastest one. So I've got 40 days. So even though I've been training for hill climbs and doing anything else, I am probably in my best physical strength that I've been in a long time. So
I blitz that one. Set a PR.
I'm 7 years older than I was last time I did the speed. So we'll see what I've got in it. But I'm probably going to try to do a PR for that to get underneath that. I didn't share. I think I said it was like 5 hours. So actually my time for that race was 5 hours and 9.8 seconds.
Awesome.
So I got to knock off the 9.8 seconds.
Sub five. I'm predicting it right now. Sub five. There we go.
And then at the end of the year, I have a friend. I mentioned I did the Ring of Fire running around my neighborhood. He mentioned to me there's a couple of like a 12-hour race to do in December. And then at the end of the year, just doing something silly like last 5 days of the year, doing a 5K, 10K, half, full, and 50K. Non-official. Just kind of chill out.
Those are the fun ones, man. That is so awesome. Very, very cool. Well, you know, we like to end all of our chats here on Living an Ultra Life with the name of the podcast is Living an Ultra Life. So when you hear the title, what's the first thing that pops in your mind?
You know, I think the idea of the living of the ultra life was something that embodied on the dragon's back. You know, something that was so big, so amazing, so powerful, so ultra, that, you know, it affects you and everything that you do. And so that's what came to mind.
That's awesome. I'm so proud of you for getting out there and being vulnerable and just kind of putting yourself to the test on something that is really, really difficult and coming through at the other end. And I can't wait to see 6 months from now where you are.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was an amazing thing. And I actually owe so much support to, you know, every night I came into the campsite and they did have a Wi-Fi set up. And so there was friends and family and church members who were praying for me and rooting me on and, you know, part of your community that supports your, you know, what really got me through every night. It was a big part.
Cool. So let's kind of finish it up. Who would you like to thank, and who are some of the people you'd like to thank most of all? Go ahead and name them.
So, Coach Danny, is my, running trainer.
Danny Filipek?
Yep.
No way.
You
know
her?
She's who coached me through Blackbeards.
Okay. That's where I first met her several years ago. Yep.
Okay. That is crazy.
Yeah,
okay. All right. Good job, Danny. Another one.
When I started doing the race, she said that, I said, I have to call you. Can you help me out here? And she jumped in. And so she's, from day one has gave me training plans and pushed me to do everything that was there and very compassionate days when I can't do something. You know, it's not like I do this every day for a living. I got to do a job too. So to manage and do all that part. And then Unify is my fitness training group that I have here locally. And okay. Holly is our personal trainer that my wife and I go to. So she was a huge push in, you know, keeping, never letting us slack off, always doing the strength training that we needed to do that part of it. But actually, hands down, over and above everything else, would be my wife, Regina. She was always there, always supportive. I hated her when we went up to the mountains and she told me, nope, you got to go to the Appalachian Trail. You can come back later. I'll see you at the end. I'm not going to be there to pick you up. So you might as well go ahead and do the 10 miles. and not only that, but her smiling face when I was able to come in every night at the end of the long day's run to see was amazing support. So those are my heroes.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eugene.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.